Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you'll learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlotnik. Today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Glenn Stromberg. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing today?
I'm great. And how are you?
And I'm doing great. And I appreciate you having me on your podcast. I really do.
And I appreciate you coming on the podcast. And for the audience, Glenn, we were in two masterminds. One of them, The Collective Genius. The other one is Freedom Founders. You're a great friend and you are an absolute expert in mobile homes. So today we'll talk a little bit about Glenn, who he is, what he does, and then we'll focus a little bit on mobile homes as that's his absolute area of expertise. Probably one of the most foremost experts in the field that I know. So Glenn, could you tell us a little bit about you? You live in Dallas, Texas area, but you do business both in Dallas and in Carolinas.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I live in, and once again, thanks, Mike, for having me on your podcast. I consider you a great friend too, and I appreciate this. So, but yeah, I live in Fort Worth, Texas, and our company buy properties in Texas, North and South Carolina, which I'll get into the reasons here in a little bit. But and just to differentiate for the people listening, There's two types of mobile homes. One is a personal property mobile home. Those are the ones that normally are on mobile home parks. You can keep it like a car title, okay? And then the other one is real property mobile homes. That's what our current model is. Every home that we buy is on land, has a deed of trust or a mortgage to it, and we get a title commitment on it. So it's real estate, ones we buy. So
that makes a huge difference. So in my view, the mobile parks that you can transport versus the mobile parks, the mobile homes that you can transport versus the ones that you have that are real estate. I guess they're still transportable, but it's a much harder to move them because they basically bolted into the ground and they installed. They're just called mobile homes, but in reality, it's real estate.
Correct. When you deliver the home, most of them go on an FHA compliant foundation. They're tied into the ground. You surrender the title, they make it real estate. And plus, when you go to move them, they're very expensive to break down and move and all that stuff. So no one ever does it. So it's real estate.
Got it. So if you sell a mobile home to somebody, can they get an FHA loan?
If we sell the home to someone who's going to live in the house, absolutely. They get the same FHA financing as you do on a brick house. So it's the same financing that qualifies for.
Fannie, Freddie, all can qualify owner-occupied FHA.
Yes. The FHA program is really, there's not a lot of conventional financing for mobile homes.
But FHA works pretty well.
Absolutely. FHA works. And that's the primary funding source for people when they're buying, you know, mobile homes on land.
Got it. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So let's start with the basics. Do you buy them all distressed and then rehab them and then sell them? I know you keep a bunch of them. So let's talk a little bit about your business model.
Very good. Yeah. What we do is we have in the three states, we have six acquisition people. Okay. In every home, We buy them from various sources, you know, HUD bid list, auction sites, MLS. We market to homeowners. We do all the things that people do to buy houses, right? And so every property we buy them, we fix them up, we rehab it, we property manage it. Okay, we have two exit strategies that we do with our investors. Half of the homes we keep for ourselves. The other half we sell as a turnkey to our investors. So we always say it this way: our investors are 100% passive, whether they're the lien holder or the owner. We do everything for them. Okay, we do everything for them. All they have to do is wire the money to the title company, and then they have to just double check their statement to make sure it hits on the first of the month, which it always does. So that's an overview of what we do. So yeah, half the properties, technically we're flipping them, but we're flipping them to our investors, not to
owner occupied. I got you.
That's correct.
So most of your stuff is basically great investment properties. They generate strong cash flow. How does it compare from everything I hear mobile home or mobile home parks, but you're doing mobile homes. You're not buying the parks. You're pretty much individual homes.
That is correct. They're individual houses on individual pieces of land. They're just, like I say, they're real estate. So, and now how they compare, you know, I always like to say that mobile homes on land are the best kept secret in real estate investing. Okay. They're literally half the price or less of a, you know, of a stick built house. And in a lot of cases, the cash flow is a lot better. In some cases, the cash flows are double on them. So it's a very lucrative business. Now, you know, I always tell people this too. Mobile homes are like cars, right? There's lower end cars all the way to the higher end cars. Same thing with mobile homes. So you do got to be careful that you buy the ones that are going to hold up over time. There's some that were built cheaper back in the day, and they don't necessarily make good rentals. But you know, that's all part of our acquisition process and our due diligence period. So.
Gotcha. So just one quick just comparison. How do mobile homes compare to manufactured homes? Is it the same or is it similar?
Technically, it's the same thing. Okay. They came up with the word manufactured home because it's fancier than mobile home. That's really it. They're the same thing. Now, there is a different classification. A modular home does have a different specification. Those are built more to meet city codes, different type of plumbing, higher roof pitch, stuff like that. But just to give you the overview on manufactured homes, okay? Back in the 60s and 70s, there was really little to no, you know, guidelines. HUD wasn't involved. I think it was 1976 or 77. HUD got involved. They made minimum standards. And really the year that they changed everything was 1990 and above. Okay. They built a better quality product. They OSB or plywood flooring versus they used to use an old particle board flooring that was garbage. And so, so they really picked up the construction side of it. And, you know, I think I've told you this before, but for the people listening, my dad is a mason contractor and a builder in Chicago. And he came and looked at about 15 of my, you know, my homes, and they're double wides that are anywhere from mostly, you know, 1600 to 2200 square feet. That's probably our sweet spot. He looked at the houses and he looked at my stuff and he goes, man, these are built better than the track houses in Chicago, which he was shocked. They're built that good. So,
yeah, that's great to hear. I guess the standards have gone up and the product is now a quality product.
It's a very good quality product, and there's some that would blow your mind because it's got every. I mean, they're doing 2 and 3 story ones now. They're doing ones that are 3 and 4 and $500,000. They would absolutely blow you away what they're building these days.
Yeah, I hear you. So for investors, what do they typically buy? What do they pay? So use an example in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and then North and South Carolina. And by the way, why those markets? So why in those markets? Maybe because it's local to you.
Let me give you the overview of Texas is where I'm from, and this is where I've done business for many, many years. Okay. A little bit more history on me. I've been in the manufactured housing business now for over 30 years. Okay. I've owned dealerships. I've owned mobile home dealerships, which is like a car dealership. I actually have owned mobile home parks. I've developed mobile home subdivisions, and I've been doing my current model since 2006. Okay. So, like in the Dallas Fort Worth area, if you draw a line from downtown Dallas and downtown Fort Worth, 30 to 45 miles, all the surrounding suburbs, that's where our properties are. Most of the homes are on acre tracts of land, or some are 2 acre tracts of land. And, my typical house today that we buy is probably, when I say all in price, the acquisition plus rehab is probably $80,000 to $90,000 now in the Dallas Fort Worth area. Okay. Rents are higher here. Our typical rents now are anywhere from $1,100 to high of $1,500 a month. Okay. And then in the Carolinas, it's almost half price. The rents are lower. The sales prices are lower. It's more like $40,000 to $45,000 is the typical all-in price in the Carolinas. The rents are probably closer to $800, somewhere in that neighborhood, $850. But the numbers work out surprisingly similar from a rate of return and from an investor point of view.
Yeah, I appreciate that explanation. It makes a lot of sense. I would imagine that the Carolinas, the cash on cash should be a little higher, but
sometimes yes, sometimes no, honestly. But yeah, probably as an overall, it is. Yes, it's probably overall it is. Yes.
So most people, I assume, well, based on what you told me, are buying them cash. There's really not great amount of bank financing available. And we've tried. I reached out to a banker on your behalf, and most banks look at this stuff as not real estate, but more like an operating business. And it's a little bit harder to get financing from that perspective. Other than FHA, the banks are still a little shy on this type of an asset.
Yeah. Now there's been a few guys that have been able to get from their local bank. They're strong at their local bank. They can do it. But really, you know, anything under $100,000, banks don't want to mess with anyway, right? I mean, they don't want to mess with it. They can't make no money on it. But what a lot of guys in our group that are doing, our mutual friends and so forth, they're buying the home from me, and then they're bringing in someone in their network, and then they're arbitraging it and making the difference. So they're getting leverage that way.
Private financing, private mortgage.
That is correct. Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. So as part of your marketing, if you get a non-mobile home opportunity, do you still work on them, or you strictly, if it's not mobile home, it's outside of your focus, you don't do anything?
Well, no, we always say this, okay? If we run into a killer deal, we're going to buy it.
Yeah. Real estate 101. You obviously, yeah.
We're going to, if we run into a killer deal, and we do every now and then, we'll buy it, okay? But our primary focus is mobile homes, because that's our sweet spot. That's our area of expertise. That's our niche, and we try not to deviate from it.
Gotcha. So management of these properties, who manages them in Dallas, Fort Worth, and North and South Carolina? Do you have dedicated management companies, or is it your companies?
It's my company. Okay. We have a full-time property management company that manages the properties in Texas and the Carolinas. Okay. And, you know, my experience has been this, and, you know, unfortunately, you know, we're in the same mastermind groups. We hear this repeatedly. Contractors, it's really hard to find good contractors. It's really hard to find good property managers too. Okay. So I personally would never feel comfortable turning my properties over, selling it to an investor, and turning it over to another property management company. We do it all internally, in-house. What I did, this is kind of an interesting story too, because this in 2008, right? That's when the crash hit. Well, at that time, I was just really flipping the mobile homes. And I was probably, with no overhead out of my house, I was flipping three a month and making $30,000 a house. And then when 2008 hit, I couldn't give a house away. And I had 18 properties out in the field that the banks froze, wouldn't do nothing. They just weren't, you know. So I had to go learn. I went and interviewed property management companies. I went to real estate investment seminars. And basically what I did was, I copied what everybody else was doing well and came up with a business model, and that's what we do. That's how we manage the properties. So,
Glenn, I think it's very important. What you're doing is you kind of you eat your own dog food. You manage your own properties and you manage investor properties. So people who invest with you, you provide them a high quality service. And what does this cost? What's the property management service cost? Is it typically 8%, 10% of revenue? What is it cost?
We do 10%. We do 10% standard 10%. Yeah, that's what we do. Yeah. So we've got three people in our property management department. We broke it out into a leasing, you know, a leasing side and a you know, the collection side, the property management, and the maintenance side. So that's how we break it out.
Makes sense. How many properties are you managing today?
We're pushing around 250 right now. We're around 250, and we're adding about 10 or more a month right now. So we're growing pretty fast. So
that's great. I mean, that's a good economy of scale already. And then over time, you can get kind of bigger and better. And as long as you have strong processes and good people, you could repeat and grow and do more.
Very, very good point right there. And you know, just what we did last year was, we knew the opportunity to grow was there. Okay. So we went through the traction process, the EOS process, which was the greatest thing we ever did. We couldn't have gone where we've gone without that. And I recommend everyone listening, if they've got a business and they have not done the traction or the EOS process, you know, I would strongly suggest they take a look at it, because to me, that wasn't an expense. That was an investment. So we got our team in place last year to handle the volume. And then now we're in the process. And so we're, you know, we're, we can handle it very well this year. We can handle it very well, the increased volume, and the 10 a month is our team can handle it pretty simple. So
yeah, Glenn, and I appreciate you acknowledging the implementation of EOS traction. It is a one of the best methodologies used out there for small businesses. I spent years ago in big corporations, and they have advanced systems and processes, and all big companies, they create standard operating procedures, and that's how they operate. When, the moment you go to small companies, this stuff is a obvious hole in many businesses. And when a good implementer comes in, that system just strengthens the businesses. It forces creation of various process documents, a little bit of an overhead, but it makes something that is not a business into a business. It's a repeatable business, and that's the key. It's something that operates as a business, and that's great to hear.
Without question, and like I say, it was a total game changer. It was the best move I ever made in business. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying this. So now let's talk a little bit about investors. When they come in, and you're all in 80,000-90,000, and they're buying it from you, typically, what price do they buy it at? And then you have to make a profit, obviously. What is your typical in Fort Worth in area and Dallas area versus the Carolinas? You have a spread, reasonable spread, obviously.
We're looking to buy the properties no more than 75% of fair market value or less, okay? So we've got 25% equity going in or more. Okay, that's where we draw the line. We're not paying full price, and we're not doing that. So the investor, and like when they're coming in on the lender side, okay, what we do is this: we pay them. It's a 5-year interest only note. We pay them 6% plus 2 points. We guarantee they'll make no less than 8%, but that never comes into play because after 5 years, they're going to get 35% of the shared appreciation, which, once again, we've got 25% going in. These last 5 years have been crazy how it's appreciated in Texas, right? A lot of the properties have doubled, and so, but we know that's not going to happen over time. We understand that. But you know, under that program, history shows that they will get strong double-digit returns, and so it's a really good program. And plus, the equity side of it grows tax deferred. You're not paying taxes on it. Why it's sitting? Why the equity's there too? So that's nice for some of the rich guys. So they
no, it makes sense. So you're doing shared appreciation loan on one side, and then on the other side, what if they want to participate in the equity? How does that work?
So what we do is this: our primary model is we will take the same house, we'll take our equity off the table, we'll mark it up $15,000. Sell it to them. They have a 12%+ rate of return going in, and it works out. It works out great. We're just basically taking our equity off the table at that time.
Got it. Okay. So you either sell it to them at your cost basis and essentially borrowing the money, and you're giving them 35% of the upside with 6% interest at 2 points, or they have to buy at the fair market value. You make your spread for rehabbing the house.
It's usually less than
the discount to the market.
Yeah, it's usually less than the fair market value, but it's not as much, you know. I mean, once we take our 15,000, they're probably in it, you know, I'm guessing 85 to 90% of fair market value in most cases. But then they get all the upside growth and everything else too. So
what's a typical cash on cash when they buy it from you at the full price? So if they lend you the money, they get 6 plus 2 points and minimum return of 8%. But if they buy it, what kind of cash on cash do they get approximately?
12 to 13.
Is it after repair reserves and management fees?
After everything, yes. After everything, correct.
Wow, that's pretty strong, right? It's a really strong cash flow.
No, it's a real good cash flow. That's why I say there's less money. The cash flows, and here's one other thing, Mike. That you know, like people, this always comes up. Well, don't mobile homes depreciate? Okay, the answer to the question is yes and no. If it's a personal property mobile home, they absolutely depreciate. It's just like a car. They're going to depreciate over time. But when they're tied into the land, when they're real estate, they're going to go up and down with the market, right? I mean, and I'll use the our area here, right? You know, in 2010, you were able to buy a brick house in a nice suburb here for $125,000, $130,000, $150,000. Now that same house is $250,000 to $300,000, right? Well, our properties did the exact same thing, where I used to buy them for $60. They're probably worth $60. Now they're worth about $120, you know, $120, $130. So they go up and down with the real estate market. So that's how they work.
Yeah, that's a great point. Thinking a little bit about this is that it's a supply demand of housing ultimately, right?
Correct.
If demand is strong, and then the non-manufactured homes, non-mobile homes, just this traditional product gets more expensive, that's a tide that lifts all boats, and it lifts your product as well. And it's just your product is less expensive, somehow it's perceived. But from what you told me, from a square footage perspective and the quality of materials, it doesn't necessarily fall behind the non-manufactured homes. It looks like probably the same. The house looks similar to the
traditional house. It really does. And here's the other beauty of what we of our properties too. They're normally in better school districts. Okay, they're out in the suburbs. They're in better school districts. Plus, they get an acre or 2 acres of land, where versus a zero lot line house in Dallas or Fort Worth. And so a lot of times they prefer our houses for those reasons versus the brick house anyway. So those factors worked our favor. So
yeah, I hear you. So one quick question: when there's a land, and then you're considering to put a manufactured home versus or a mobile home versus a traditional, do you do any of that ground up construction? Are you pretty much doing only?
Every home we buy is already on everyone we buy, the mobile home's already on the land. We don't move anything.
So you're doing light lifting. You're not doing heavy lifting. You're picking up properties. You're doing just renovations. You're not trying to get into heavy rehab stuff. You're getting into something very manageable, not necessarily all cosmetic, but something that you could get done within. What does your rehab typically take? 2-3 months or less?
Oh, no. Heck no. Normally, we can get it done in you know, we always say give us a month to get it done, right? But in most cases, we can be in and out of there in 2 weeks. Here's the other thing, Mike. With manufactured homes, the beauty of it is if the home ever does settle, all you do is take the skirting off, re-level it for about $1,000, you're done, right? There's no foundation problems. There's no all the plumbing, all the stuff. It's easy to get to the plumbing. So we don't have a lot of the issues that a lot of these other guys do. Plus, we're not in the cities where we have inspectors and all that other stuff. And so most of our stuff is carpet paint, skirting, decks. You know, it's mostly cosmetic stuff is what we do.
Yeah, I hear you. It makes my maintenance a whole lot easier.
It's real important too, so I don't forget. We always make sure we put new appliances in there now. Okay, we always new air conditioner, new appliances. Never, you know, to make sure that we're pushing the deferred maintenance off, and it's everything's new going in. So
that's great. That's that you deliver a quality product, which will hopefully not need a lot of ongoing upkeep for years to come.
We try to do this, and for two reasons. Okay. We try to make that home look like new. We want that for the tenant, because we never want, you know, I've learned this, that a woman, whether she's buying the home or renting the house, that's her nest. She wants it to shine when she has company come over. So we make it look as close to new as possible. And then plus from the investor side of it, we want to make sure we have as little deferred maintenance as possible. You know, there will be repairs over time. We know that, right? But when you take care of the major things up front, you push that down the road quite a bit. So that's why it's a twofold purpose what we do.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So just a final couple of questions. We're kind of coming up on the time. Sure. If folks wanted to get in touch with you, and they wanted to buy one of these homes or participate in your lending program, how would they do that? What's the best way to reach out and look at your product? And
you can I always tell people, feel free to pick up the phone and call me. I'm one of those guys, I give my number out still. So that number is 817-966-1258. Or my email is glenn@strombergininvestmentgroup.com. Okay. So we tried to get SIG, we couldn't get it, but to spell it for you, it's STROMBERG, then investmentgroup.com. So that's you can get a hold of me that way too.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you for sharing.
Oh, my pleasure.
What's your phone ring with some hopefully interesting?
You know, I enjoy it. I enjoy it, and so yeah, that's I hope it does. I hope it does. So.
Yeah, sounds great. Any other thoughts or feedback? I absolutely love your product. We've been friends for a while, and I certainly want to invest in some of them. My primary issue have been management. I don't want to invest into a lot of small assets. So we were chatting a little bit about maybe doing some kind of a fund or some kind of, you know, one entity that, but I do like the sector. The sector itself with strong cash flow presents a good opportunity and appreciation. I guess it is really a function of the markets, probably similar to whatever everything else appreciates in those sub markets where you invest in.
And one other thing I want to say too, okay, and this is why I really love my model, okay, no matter, you know, I think we both know there's another, something's coming, right? It's we're due. The charts say we're going to have some kind of a reset, some kind of a downturn, whatever you want to call it.
Slow down at the very minimum, slow down because we've been running too good for too long.
Slow down to work, you know, who knows, okay? But here's the beauty, I think, of, you know, there's two things people are always going to do. They're always going to eat and they're going to have a roof over their head.
Right.
I have the most affordable roof over their head, okay? And so and back in 2008, the people that were leasing the bigger brick houses would come down to us. So we had an abundance. And so what happened in 2008 was people couldn't buy anymore, but it put a whole lot more people in the renter side, and renting was easy. And so I look at it, I never want to say recession-proof, but I think it's as close to recession-proof as you can get because it's affordable housing, and that's a good space to be in, no matter if the market's good or bad.
Yeah, I happen to agree with you 100%. What's interesting is there's been a pattern already happening around the country where people have been shifting from the expensive higher end stuff to more affordable range as interest rates have gone up. Right, this has happened over the last 2 years. You see softening in the expensive markets. And you don't see as much in Dallas, but the coastal markets have seen already softening because of that fact, the affordability. So the shift of demand is to affordability. If you can't afford $300,000 home, you can afford $150,000 home. So as rates go up and they can't afford the expensive stuff, they just shift out. Everybody does. They still need a home to live. And if your product looks similar, works similar, you're certainly going to get some. In fact, your stuff may appreciate while the other stuff will soften up because of shift of demand.
It very well could.
That's substitution effect. Yeah, economics 101. So
That's right. So
anyway, Glenn, I greatly appreciate you coming on the podcast. This has been great. This is very insightful on the mobile home market and business and everything else. I don't have any other questions. Any final thoughts?
No, that was, like I say, I really appreciate this. It's been a pleasure and an honor to be on your podcast, and you know, you're a good friend. I think the world of you, and it's been fun for me. Been a lot of fun. So,
Glenn, thank you so much for your kind word and for your wisdom. And see you soon at the Collective Genius, and we'll talk soon in between.
Sounds good. All right, Mike. Have a good day. Thanks.
You too. Take care. Bye bye.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.